3, 2, 1.
Here we go! Hello! Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of The No Normal Show, brought to you by BPD. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust. And we celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm your co-host, Stephanie Weirwill, EVP of Engagement here at BPD, and I'm joined by Chris Wickline, SVP of Strategy. Hello, hello, Chris.
Happy Monday, Stephanie. How are you?
Oh, it is a happy Monday. Don't know if that's a thing, but we're making it a thing. And this Monday, we get to dig into some really wild news. We're coming to you on Monday, May 20th. For one of our short bite-sized episodes we call News Flash by No Normal, because we're going to take in all the headlines from last week. There were a lot of headlines about AI last week. The news feeds were popping off about the GPT-4o release, the Google I.O. developer conference, and this morning, Monday, May 20th, Microsoft's Copilot Plus PC announcement. So Chris, you and I have been kind of leaning into the AI world for a while. It's been over a year, but I don't know about you, but I feel like this past week was just an absolute whirlwind. It felt to me like a year worth of progress was shoved into Monday and Tuesday. I don't know. How did you feel last week?
Oh my God. Like, just, it's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. Part of me is like excited. Well, I am excited. At the same time, I'm scared. At the same time, it's just the advances. And I was thinking about that too, just playing around with some of this. The advances that have happened are just absolutely mind-blowing. Mind-blowing.
They are. They are. So we're going to get into it and we'll talk about what blew our minds and which features and which specific announcements blew our minds and why. We'll also make sure that this is as relevant as possible to our listeners who are largely healthcare marketers. So some implications I think are, you know, ripe for experimenting today. Some are wait and see, but overall, you know, you got to get in there. Like Chris is saying, you got to get in and start playing with these tools if you're not already and playing with the most recent ones. So speaking of, I'll give a little bit of a setup for GPT-4o, and then Chris, I want to hear all of your thoughts and feelings. So we'll start where the week started last week. Monday was the OpenAI announcement about GPT-4o. That is their newest flagship model, and there's a lot of things that make it different. I won't hit all of them. I'll just hit a couple, and then Chris, you can jump in with more. So I think the biggest one is that it's fully multimodal, which means it has the ability to work across all kinds of different formats. So it doesn't just read and write like ChatGPT 3.5 and 4. It can also speak and hear and see, and strangely, it can even sing. So we can talk to GPT-4o and a variety of voices. I'll just stop there. Chris, tell us more about the multimodality and what that means.
I mean, I think, you know, again, what I would say is if you haven't checked it out, and maybe we can, I don't know if we can include a link, Stephanie, but going to the GPT-4 or going to the ChatGPT website, OpenAI website, openai.com actually, just to take a look, they've got some demos out there, really quick demos of what things can do, all the way from exactly what you said, kind of singing and, you know, asking it different questions. It even has AI assistants talking to AI assistants. So in other words, you ask an AI assistant to do something like a customer service request, and it actually then, you know, shows a demo of how it would talk to another AI assistant on the receiving end to resolve your problem. I mean, just checking it out for the flavor of it, I think is so important, because it's those two-minute snippets that can just describe so much more about what it can do than we probably can in this limited time we've got.
Yeah. And maybe we'll just start off with a bang here with asking it about itself. So I have it pulled up right now. So I'm going to ask Sky, which is the voice I chose. We'll come back to Sky and what has made news feeds pop about that voice. But I will ask her. about multimodality. Hi. So I want to learn a little bit more about multimodality and what that means for generative AI large language models. Can you describe multimodality to me in a, you know, 15-second explanation for, you know, kind of like a 15-year-old? She's thinking.
Multimodality in generative AI means that AI can understand and create content using different types of data, like text, speech, images, and even video. So instead of just reading and writing, it can also talk, listen, and see, making interactions more natural and versatile, like a human.
So there was Sky. So whose voice did that sound like?
I can tell you what the web is flying with. At least the web was flying that Sky sounded like Scarlett Johansson. Now, I can't tell you if that sounds like her or not, to be honest with you. It's not like I'm an aficionado.
I can hear it. I can hear it. Yeah, it's like the smoothness of the voice. It's a good voice. But anyway, rumor is that that voice is going to be taken down. For some reason, I still have access. But anyway, you can choose your different voices. You can ask her to sing to you, all kinds of different things. So that's one of the big elements, but that's not it. It doesn't stop there. It can browse the web, which is a pretty big deal, because that means that it can kind of scrape the web for all kinds of information, which now allows for it to be pulling knowledge that's real time. For example, I asked it a few minutes ago about the Microsoft announcement, and you know, she wasn't perfect, but she did get it in general. Chris, do you see yourself using that feature?
I do, but I want to say something about speaking about perfection. There is some interesting things because, again, this stuff was just unleashed on the world last week. So I think, you know, those of us who are watching are trying to figure it out. But once it starts making its way into the public domain a little bit further, I can't wait to hear about consumer sentiments. Because one of the interesting things was, as you start getting these voices, and the voice you shared there still sounds very, it sounds natural, but not like your buddy. If you look at some of the examples on the OpenAI website, you know, you've got these assistants that are talking back to you, kind of giggling and sounding like your friend. And to me, that's where it starts getting a little weird. I'm certainly going to play with this and try it, but it just felt a little, that voice feels okay. Other things feel a little awkward. And it's so interesting, you know, what does kind of tone tell you about credibility of information, even when you might be slinging some things that are, or I'm saying the model would be slinging things that are maybe less than accurate. So many things to unwind here.
It's a good point, because I think a lot of the, you know, an analyst popped in after the GPT-4.0 announcement and said, yeah, like the ability to read you a bedtime story in a different voice, or, you know, have different tones or have different emotions, all of that is just kind of like cute. And your point, I think, is important, which is, sure, but maybe there's implications. So what it does is it makes it much more human-like, and it kind of takes us into this world where in the future, will we know the difference between, you know, AI and human? We're not there yet, but it's interesting. So let's talk about healthcare implications. Actually, let me hit one more feature that I think is important about GPT-4.0, and then let's talk about implications overall. So one really important point is it's free for everyone. I don't think it's been fully released as free for everyone quite yet. The model I just shared is under the paid version, but it will be free for everyone. And that's a big deal. And a lot of folks are saying that's maybe the most important point of this announcement, because instead of, you know, folks having to sign up for the faster, better, newer, better, you know, smarter model, they can just start in using GPT for free. So it makes it open to the public and theoretically increase usage significantly. Chris, did you have any builds on the importance of free?
No, I mean, it's no different than what they did when they first released ChatGPT to the world, right? I mean, you know, it's free, it's out there, you get to play with it. And I mean, I downloaded the app on my phone and, you know, I'm able to use it, and I'm not a paid user of GPT.
Yeah. Okay. So you are using the free version.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So let's wrap up GPT-4o, but what implications do you see that are really important about the change in the last week, Chris? What are the big takeaways that marketers should have?
Well, first of all, like you said already, just can't reiterate, start looking at this stuff, right? So just start getting up to speed, start acquainting yourself. I saw some of these things and I thought, oh my gosh, what could you do with things like patient education? How could you create kind of more interactive, you know, interactive tools to allow people to learn more about a condition in a way that kind of meets them where they are? I think that was, you know, one immediate example that I was thinking about. Now I'm zooming into the most tactical level possible. I'm sure there's a thousand others, right?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of implications for work and how we do work. It was Sam Altman who mentioned he did an interview the day after, a couple of days after the announcement. It was on the Logan Bartlett show on YouTube. And he was talking about how now with a voice assistant in your pocket, who's much smarter and better than Siri or Alexa, he didn't say that, but it is, you know, if instead of just browsing the web and opening all these tabs, like we constantly do as, you know, for knowledge workers, you have this assistant you can just start talking to. So I think even just for day-to-day work, it actually is applicable today. And then yes, from a healthcare standpoint, I like the idea of education, because think about what doctors don't have time to do, assuming it's accurate information, don't have time to have those conversations with patients. This could, you know, allow that.
Yeah. And I mean, the accuracy is important, right? Because we've even seen you've seen it too in your own playing with it, that sometimes the information is marginally useful. You have to keep pushing it to get better. Now models are advancing. So of course that might, you know, that's going to help things, but the key is this stuff is going to have to be useful, and or people are going to have to be patient. Or while the majority, until the majority of folks get online with it, it's going to be developing. In other words, maybe there's a little bit more patience with early adopters than with general consumers.
Right, because a lot of us are sitting here using it, envisioning the future and getting excited as opposed to excited about the current tech. Okay, let's move on to Google I.O. So the day after the GPT-4o announcement was the Google I.O. Developer Conference, and lots of new announcements were made. How many, Chris, did you say? You said how many announcements?
100 things Google announced at the I.O. That was actually one of their blog posts, and it really is mind-blowing. It was like totally shock and awe. From Google. I mean, I'm just blown by the amount of things that they put out there, from things like new chips to enable computing, to AI assistance, to everything you talked about, from multimodality, image, music, voice. I mean, just berserk. Berserk.
Yeah, it was almost like, my theory is that OpenAI realized Google I.O. was coming. So they made their announcement the day before. And then Google was kind of like, LOL, like, yes, we announced everything you did plus a whole bunch. So some of the pluses were, first of all, a new video generation model called Veo, which seemed to surpass Sora. If anybody remembers when we did our deep dive into Sora, which is OpenAI's video generation model that can create text to video. So you type in a prompt like, create, you know, a video of a woman walking through the streets of Tokyo, and there she is, or create a video of a lion running through the field. So Veo is not yet available, but it looks great. They also released Imagen 3, which is a new image generation model. They released the fact that Gemini AI is now embedded in devices. It can be used directly in Gmail and across the entire Google suite, which is huge. I think we could talk about that all day. But why don't we dig into AI overviews, which is search. So Chris, you had mentioned in our prep session that this might be one of the most impactful things for marketers. So tell us a little bit about AI overviews.
Well, I mean, if you've been using Google search, you've been seeing it. You know, put in a Google search and all of a sudden you get a summary back rather than a bunch of links. And now that is essentially kind of the overview, right? It's giving you an overview. The issue is that while this is amazing, and I mean, think about it. Google excelled by creating a better user experience. Remember back in the days of search, you know, you had something like Yahoo where you could search and be bombarded with 1,000 things on a 1,000 things that you were looking at on their homepage. And Google came in there with just a clean experience, trying to give you what you're looking for. So here they are again, right? Trying to synthesize information for you in kind of the easiest way. The easiest way possible. The issue is, not sure what that means for, you know, how you optimize SEO, right? How is the AI model returning and choosing what to summarize? What might that mean for people who rely on SEO for traffic?
Yeah, I think it's really important. And we did an episode a couple months ago about search generative experience and just raised the question, which still stands and is even a bigger question now, which is, okay, so you put all this effort and time into SEO and SEM, but especially SEO, and you're really trying to rank higher and higher. Well, what happens when now the result is simply returning a kind of just a conversational snippet, and you get everything that you need right there at the top of the page? You don't even have to click through. You don't have to open 19 tabs. You get your answer and you move on. So what is the new SEO? And I don't want to act like SEO is dead. It's not, right? Don't run away from your keyword strategy. Keep doing what you're doing, but also start thinking about what does a world look like in which we need to optimize for this type of experience.
Yeah. I mean, the good news is that there are going to be people, we're all going to be figuring it out at the same time. But here again, you have to have serious eyes and a serious attention on this. You can't afford not to pay attention. I mean, Gartner was suggesting that search volume would fall 25% by 2026 as a result of AI search. I mean, there's big implications here. So I think the good news is we probably all have the opportunity to kind of learn as we're going along. But you know, that's the important piece.
Yeah. And I'm going to go out on a limb and put a theory out, which is, I think that it just means that more than ever before, that useful content that is more and more and more important. So we've been saying this for a long time, right? Yes, keywords matter, but you know what matters more is creating content that's really, really, really useful. So my understanding is that the way that that search generative experience and AI overview work is they're pulling from the web and making decisions about what is going to be most relevant and useful for this query, but also, you know, what is kind of mentioned frequently. So if you say like top five restaurants in Nashville that are kid friendly and have patios, it's going to pull from news articles. It's going to pull from content pieces. So if you've done a great job and you have a lot of content out there and you've been mentioned in the news, I think you're better off. But I don't know, early theory.
Well, and you know, I mean, go back to the early days of search. For those of you who remember, there was a lot of gaming of the algorithm. How do we game the algorithms? And the reality was, again, Google wants to provide good user experiences. That's what keeps people coming back to Google. So it is about sticking to the knitting, focusing on your content. What happened is, you know, when people realized gaming algorithms was no longer a game, you know, they had to focus on putting great content out there to get attention. So I think that's a smart thing, Stephanie, is to say, just, you know, double down. Don't keep your eye off the ball. The fundamentals are still going to be the fundamentals. Sure, things are going to change, but you know, that becomes the holy grail. It's about providing people with useful information.
Yeah. Okay. We have two more quick headlines to cover, and this is supposed to be bite-sized. We're trying to cover what feels like a year's worth of progress in 20 minutes. So if you feel overwhelmed, the whole world feels overwhelmed. So rumor, dun-dun-dun, there's a rumor that Apple is talking to OpenAI and Google to infuse large language models into Siri and their devices. Chris, tell us more.
Well, that's all over the news. I mean, it seems like maybe OpenAI has a leg up based on the rumors, but that Google still has a potential role in different things. I don't know. The Worldwide Developer Conference is in early June. So, I mean, I would expect some announcements into that. People are saying it's imminent. I think, you know, when we were talking a little bit before this, as we're, you know, kind of blown away at all that's happening, the question is, how does this just get built into all of the devices that we're touching, right?
Yeah, that's the level up, is to not have to open your ChatGPT app or to go to the browser on the web, and it's just seamlessly there on your watch, on your phone, on your glasses, which Google might be bringing back, on your Apple Vision Pro, in your Tesla. Which of course, I don't want to act like Siri and Alexa haven't already done that. They just haven't been quite smart enough to really make the impact they need. So one more company is also talking or actually doing it, embedding into devices. Tell us, Chris, what was today's announcement?
Today's announcement was from Microsoft. So essentially what they're going to be doing is they're going to be embedding Copilot directly into their Surface their Surface computer. So you're already seeing that kind of, you're already seeing that happen. Again, this was just announced this morning. So I caught a little bit of news. I didn't dive deep, but now we see it, right? Here it comes.
Right. Here it comes. It's being embedded in there. And they're of course trying to get that edge over Apple, make that announcement before Apple. And
And Stephanie, so, I mean, does this remind you of the early days of the internet when you had browsers, essentially internet browsers that were embedded into search devices? I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. It's kind of just reshuffling the whole technology, you know, world order. You know, for so many years, Microsoft was behind Google, you know, and now all of a sudden there's so many new players. Google's definitely asserting its leadership. It's just so crazy. It's definitely an arms race.
It is. And maybe I'll just quote Sam Altman and then we'll wrap it up. But Sam Altman in one of his recent interviews was saying, he was saying, you know, back in the day, you know, there was all these different iterations at the dawn of the internet of various, you know, search engines and various technologies. And over time, certain ones won out and others didn't. And so, you know, I think he's thinking about it that way, which is how do we make this huge impact to society? And then kind of see where the tech goes from there. So, okay, we'll call this episode Our Minds Are Blown, because I think they really are, and there are too many headlines to really keep track of. But I think that what we'll just leave folks with is be experimenting, watch these on your own. Don't take our word for it. Go watch Google I.O. Go watch the GPT-4o announcement. Go watch the interviews with Sam Altman. You know, get into this. Get deep into this, because this is absolutely the future. And there's a lot coming. All right. Well, thank you, Chris, as always, for your great gems of wisdom.
Oh, yes. That was awesome. Thank you, Stephanie.
Yeah, we get very excited about this topic. So thank you, everyone, for joining. You can always get a hold of us at nonormal@bpdhealthcare.com. Share the show with folks. Let us know what blows your mind about all the AI announcements. And don't be satisfied with the normal, because nothing is normal anymore. Push the no normal, and we'll talk to you soon. 3